Chapter 4. Don't freak. So don't freak out. I mean, do for a minute. Okay, freak out and simultaneously tell yourself this problem is temporary. In my clinical opinion, you've already taken the important and most difficult step. The step from doing nothing to doing something. The hardest one is over. You're not in denial. Or maybe some, but not enough that you're flat out ignoring the problem. You've accepted the reality that this is happening, and you do need to act and get your kids some help to stop cutting. Way to not go ragdoll or possum, as I call it. Passivity is the worst choice to make right now, and you've already chosen action. So, kudos. Yes, you're scared. But it's scary. I'm not here to talk you out of that. In general, I think people believe that helping means meeting the person where they are and helping them solve the problem. Yes, conceptually. Theoretically, people know that. But who the hell does that? How many times have you come home from a crappy day at work, put down your bag, and started to tell your partner about what a tyrant your boss was today, and the first thing out of their mouth is, well, maybe what she meant was. Or you're out for a drink with coworkers, and same thing. You have a boss complaint, and another coworker says, well, when he said that to me, I just dot, dot, dot. Or how about you complain about your partner to a close friend, and they respond, well, at least they don't do then some bullshit thing their partner does, and now the conversation is about them. It sucks. It's a miss of meeting you where you are first. And therapists do this unhelpful garbage too. You may be thinking, I'm doing it right now. You're scared, and I'm going to write this chapter telling you all the reasons you don't need to be. Nope. The difference is I validated your fear first. And I'll help you through it, not try to convince you you shouldn't feel it. Once again, for the nosebleed section, validation has to come before problem solving. I cannot emphasize enough how important this practice is, and I do it every day. I teach it every day. The reason people who actually want to help consistently miss and jump to problem solving is because they are anxious about your discomfort and don't manage their anxiety effectively. Because where would they have learned that? And unconsciously make the whole interaction about them and getting rid of their anxiety by accidentally telling you to get rid of yours. Like that's ever in the history of humans worked. On top of making it about them, it's also unsolicited advice, which we know everyone loves, right? No. When you were venting about your boss, did you ask for a solution from your work friend? Did you ever once say, hey, Cheryl, I bet you've had this happen, and I bet you handled it better than anything I'd ever think of, so tell me what to do. No. Nope. Clinically, it is my solemn wish that everyone would eliminate words and phrases like should or shouldn't. Well, actually, the mansplainer's fave. At least, never not invalidating. Well, not only that. Code 4, I didn't even listen to your point. I was just waiting to talk. And the thing is, I'm a psychologist, so the solicited advice thing is built in. But I still don't talk to people like this because it's not effective for active listening. Plus, I just think it's rude. I think these phrases are used by people with no skill for listening. People whose objective is to make the conversation about themselves as soon as they can. People who feel insecure and go around trying to prove how many facts they know while demonstrating how little they know about human connection and joy. Narcissism is an epidemic, people, but that's another book. You're going to need the skill of validation for dealing with your kid throughout this process of recovery from self-harm. So breathe, and let me give you a couple of pointers. One, you need not agree with someone in order to properly validate them. For instance, when I'm working with someone who appears to be getting in their own way, I'm not going to say, "That's an excellent point. She does suck," if I don't agree. I might say something more accurate, like, "I can see she pissed you off." Then I'm joining the person where they are without violating my own values of honesty. The more truthful example connects us without reducing authenticity. Get it? You think of one now, specific to your life. Actual events that happened recently are the most effective ones. Example, if your 15-year-old daughter gets in the car after school and immediately says she's never talking to a friend that she's had since fourth grade ever again, it may be very tempting to point out how she seems to be friends and then not be friends with other girls every other week. Not to mention the constant use of hyperbole. I often just laugh out loud, but I'm fairly certain you'd get skewered for the exact same thing. But even if you meet your daughter with something much more tempered and reasonable, like, "Well, honey, you've been friends with her since you two were little. I'm sure you'll work it out." You've engaged in a missed connection with your daughter. She will experience the first part as wholly invalidating, and the second half as problem-solving without getting it. I'm not even remotely saying I disagree with your assessment of the situation. I just know your daughter, as a result of this realistic sentence, will tell you less. On the other hand, a simple, "Oh no, what happened?" and then listening without interrupting or advice will open the door and keep it open. Two, discipline yourself to language your validation statements using "and," never "but." If I say, "You look so sad, but what the hell could I possibly say next that would go well?" Anytime a "but" follows a validation statement, it invalidates the validation statement. Everybody knows this, but still does it. See what I did there? How about everybody knows this and still does it? Look, the "but" in the first sentence nicely illustrates how everybody must not know it, or they wouldn't do it. I think you'll be surprised the impact this little tweak will have. When you discipline yourself to say, "I hear what you're saying, and you mean it, you did listen to them when they were making their point. Even if you disagree, you increase your chances of a smoother interpersonal interaction by not invalidating them. All my participants, many are young, train themselves to speak in this way, and you can do it too. While we're in the groove of validating your fear about your kid cutting, let's take a look at how often cutting occurs. First of all, the research on cutting is sparse and contradictory. Most studies examine the more broad category of NSSI, non-suicidal self-injury. But a lot of data is about inpatient residents. There's been almost no research done on NSSI in youth of color, which is abysmally typical, but it is worth noting that Native American youth may have the highest incidence of NSSI. This supports my belief that cutting and self-harm are symptoms of trauma. I wanted to find numbers to put your mind at ease that this thing has an end. But since the data appears incomplete, inconclusive, and biased, just let me level with you about what I see and have seen. Most studies agree that the most common NSSI is cutting. Many studies say up to half of adolescents, not a lot of age breakdowns, self-harm. I'd say that number is close, though low. Females seem to cut themselves more, but males punch things more. Gender politics seem to be at play, though no studies I saw discussed the over-pathologizing of women and people of color, or that the only socially sanctioned emotions for males to express is anger. While ignored self-harm behaviors get worse if not treated professionally, in my opinion, they do seem to drop off around 24 years old, often with another maladaptive coping strategy taking its place. And I have no clue what the stats are regarding my own practice. What I will tell you, though, is that the kids who work with me turn it around. The ones who can hang with my style, and it's not for everyone, to be sure, and stick, they do brave and important and difficult work with me. And I have the great pleasure of watching them save their own lives in my office. Best job ever. I really cannot say enough about the courage of the kids I've worked with. They find strength within themselves they were sure they never had. Your kid can do that too. Really, they can.